Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Bramling.
And I'm Connor Orr.
Connor, we are starting this show with the upstart New York Jets.
Wow.
Like a for real win for the Jets.
This is so. I'm not gonna do Twitter anymore. So the only way I can gauge a reaction about my column anymore is gonna be I'm just gonna run it by you live on our show, and then you're gonna tell me whether it's crazy or not. I think this is the most important win for the Jets since they beat the Patriots in the divisional round in 2011.
I think I'd agree with that.
Right, and
when you do you want to point out when you started to unfold that take, I knew where you were going, and I was ready for it.
Okay. Second part of that is part of me thinks this is kind of a bigger deal.
Maybe.
And here's why. Okay. That 2010 team was always going to be like that. That was lightning in a bottle, right? Like that was a bunch of 33, 34 year old dudes and Mark Sanchez. Just bashing people, and playing really good defense, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But like you had like Santonio Holmes, Braylon Edwards, those are your best wide receivers. Jericho Cotchery, all those guys were in their late 20s, early 30s. Bart Scott was older, so I mean, you just weren't. That wasn't the start. Like this feels like the start of something. Like in 3 years, if the Jets are really good, you'd be like, yeah, we knew it was going to happen then because. You know, all the guys that you drafted had really good games, except for Zach Wilson. But you had like even like Jermaine Johnson came in and got a sack. Sauce Gardner played really, really well. Michael Carter played really well. These are all draft picks. These are 23, 22 year old cost control guys. Garrett Wilson looked phenomenal in this game. And if only someone could get him the ball with regularity, he'd be one of the best receivers in the NFL.
I know. He is so good. And look, Zach Wilson did not play out of control in this game, which is what they need right now. It's not great, but it's not damaging, and it's kind of like, well, let's see what we can do with this team with just sort of a, let's say, competent game managing quarterback or someone doing an impression of that under center for a couple of weeks, and then we'll see if we can build that quarterback out a little bit more and. Boy, did it ever work in this one?
We'll see if we can somehow bench him for Mike White. No, I'm just kidding. And you know what else they did too? Which, again, I mean, this was a. Did you ever see The Waterboy?
Yes,
Adam
in
Sandler.
Theaters. Yeah,
did you? Me too.
Yep.
Yeah, for my friend Andrew's fifth grade birthday party, which is
that
very
was a good
cool.
Party.
I was very, very nervous because it was PG-13 and we were supposed to see Home for the Holidays with Jonathan Taylor Thomas. But
that's a bad party.
So that movie was so bad that it only lasted in theaters for like 4 days. And so they sent out the invitations for the party. The movie went out of theaters and then The Waterboy was the second option. I thought there's no way my parents were going to let me go see it. And so I had a breakdown because I was like, I'm not going to be allowed to go because it's Adam Sandler and my parents have already deemed that like not okay. But they did. Credit to them. Big moment for them letting me go to that.
Yeah,
it's great. Anyway, long story short, Dan Fouts keeps saying because they didn't hold anything back in that game, right? With Brent Musburger, it's because they didn't hold anything back. This was a game where the Jets didn't hold anything back, and one of the ways you could tell was towards the end, it was like they were just letting Zach keep it all the time. Like they were letting him zone read and run, and like he's not a large human being, you know, and they were just like, I don't care. We have to beat the Bills. Like it does. And I'm not saying they put their quarterback in harm's way, but he wasn't exactly well protected on these runs either.
Yeah, it was no longer a learning experience. It was sort of a training wheels off, like, all right, we have to figure out a way to actually move the ball and close this game out. And they did.
They did. I thought you know who's grown just as much throughout this process, I think, is Mike LaFleur. I think it was a nice game for him. Mm. The James Robinson touchdown, I thought, was a really good play call. And noticed this in training camp, wrote about it a couple times during training camp, but their Braxton Berrios sort of like motion game is really cool. And it's different than almost anything we're seeing. It's very Miami, but it just looks neat. And I don't know if it does anything, but it's fun for me to watch. So,
and that's what's important here.
That's what's important.
Yeah, this was the other thing I want to mention, and we'll talk about the Bills a little bit too. I don't think this is really a red flag game with the Bills. It's still, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's the Bills and everyone else in football. We saw this Bills team lose to the Jaguars last year. Sometimes you just have these kinds of weeks, though. I do think the Jets legitimately, you know, Bills, yeah, maybe played a C-plus game. The Jets played an A-plus game. I mean, they played up to their competition in this one. I've been noticing DJ Reed all year, mostly because I thought he was the definition of like replacement level third, fourth cornerback guy, and they signed him, and then it was clear they were going to have to play him, and it was like, whatever. You can probably survive, but whatever. He's been really good. I don't know if he is really good, but he's been really good in this defense. It's just what you can't say enough good things about Robert Saleh and what he's done with this unit. And it looks like they just sort of hit on every offseason move this past spring and winter.
It's also the first, and again, I mean, it's weird, right? Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh were not paired together, so it's not like they came in together. It's not like they had some sort of rapport, but it's the first time I can remember since Rex Ryan and Mike Tannenbaum were there where players seem to be acquired specifically for the reason of fitting into this defense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just talking to, you know, some people around the organization, you know, this goes back maybe a little bit to their first free agency together where you got a sense that like, okay, you know, he was able to walk into that building and say, I need X, Y, and Z for this thing to work. And they started to get him X, Y, and Z. And maybe it's not perfect. Maybe it's not exactly what you need, but it's at least like a B-plus version of what you need to at least make it function. And I think that they've gotten that. And it's really cool. I mean, gosh, I mean, seeing Jermaine Johnson chase down Josh Allen in the fourth quarter and just like lay the hammer down on a sack like that. Like they're big, they're physical. Quinnen Williams is just having a career season, and yeah, I don't know. This is it's neat, very neat.
It's a team that's again they're in that just the old goulash, the old 2014 goulash.
Big goulash.
They get some bounces. They're making the playoffs. If they don't, they'll finish 7-10, and everyone will be like, "Oh, you guys thought the Jets were so good, and they weren't." and that's just the way it goes. But they're legitimate wild card contenders, and we thought it was a year away. I thought it was a year. You thought it was a year away too, at least. And it looks like it's just sort of popping a little bit early here, and it's going to be interesting to see how they manage Zach Wilson going forward. Now that they, I mean, God, you got to go for it here. They're not going to win the Super Bowl, but like, man, meaningful football in January, that'd be incredible.
And you know what's cool? This is sort of I haven't written it yet, but I guess I'm saying it on a podcast, so it's the same thing. But I'm thinking, if you make the playoffs with this team, mm-hmm. it allows you to move on from Zach Wilson next year if you want to. How about that?
How so?
Because I think that they are making this run in spite of Zach. I think that's obvious, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think if you, as a GM and coach tandem, make the playoffs with this quarterback and you go to the owner and say, I mean, you saw this. Now imagine how cool we would be with, you know, Tom Brady or whoever it is. You know what I mean? Derek Carr, if he's available, whatever, you know, I think you'd get a big hell yeah, let's do it. Make Zach Wilson compete. I don't want to pay him $100 million a year. So let's go get it.
Okay.
I think you're buying yourself the cachet to stay around long enough to make this big long-term decision. That's what I
think. Okay. I agree with that. I also agree that they missed the playoffs. You can probably go to the owner and say, like, boy, what do you think we would have done with a better quarterback here? And you know, whatever, Zach Wilson's still in a developmental stage. Maybe he turns a corner in the second half of the season. Again, it was better. This week was better than the last time we saw him out there against the Patriots, where it was just, I'm not sure what was going on out there. It was some sort of backyard football, but in the worst possible way. Yeah, you could, I think... I think you're going to be looking for a quarterback this offseason regardless. But nonetheless, it's a very good team. It's a playoff-ready team. As far as the Bills go, again, I don't think there's a ton to break down with the Bills here. When we last saw them, because they had the bye week last week, that was that Packers Sunday night game, and it was getting a little bit sloppy in sort of a, like, all right, guys, like, you know, you have leeway here. You're going to beat a lot of teams by double digits and kind of get to mess around and screw around and do your thing. This was the first time since Miami where they let a team hang around. And this was much more a case of a team hang around. Miami was more a matter of a lot of weird bounces and you know, fumbled snaps and, you know, the guys collapsing in the heat type of stuff, whereas this felt more like a team that was just sort of going punch for punch with them and was sort of making them stick around.
It was cool. I guess my lingering sort of hot take, if I had a hot take off this game from the Bills side, was, does this game make you wish that you went for it a little bit more at the trade deadline, that you were a little more aggressive at the trade deadline? And again, like you said, this 1 week is not indicative of the rest of the season. They were not going to go undefeated from the trade deadline out. I don't think they really, you know, I don't know if they, of course they care if they win or lose every game, but, you know, even the best team in the NFL loses like three or four games a season. So this is one of those three or four games. But
yeah.
Does this game at all give you a little bit of pause and say, ah, you know, we're still kind of a little bit weak here, and now we've kind of missed the chance to do something about that?
They did seem to spend carefully. I mean, we know they were in on McCaffrey and decided not to spend there. You saw the the price that like Bradley Chubb fetched. That's rich. That's a lot to give up for Bradley Chubb, for a guy who's going to be a rotational lineman, edge rusher on your roster. They're also probably, I'm sure, looking at guys coming, Tre'Davious White coming back. Matt Milano didn't play in this one. He'll obviously be back at some point. They're probably looking at it that way too. It's a good question. I mean, you know, the Eagles just keep on adding dudes. And it's almost like, I don't know. I'm sure we'll second guess it if the Bills don't win the Super Bowl. But you just kind of look at it and say they already lost. I think the most difficult thing for them to overcome this year, besides Josh Allen getting hurt, would be overcoming losing the two safeties. And they've already played with the two safeties. Jordan Poyer has been back, but they have survived that fine. They're still a really, really good defense. So they're probably just, you know, looking at it and saying, well, the program's good enough that we don't really need to sort of panic spend like some other teams.
True. That's true. It's a good point.
Packers, Lions.
All right. Another loss for the Packers here. What was your take on this game, Connor? Because I didn't think it was cause for panic in the first half. But then in the second half, the Packers looked really, really bad.
So here's what I thought. I thought that this was the first time that I saw the Packers go, and maybe to other people's credit, I mean, I was just getting blasted for putting them as high as I had in the power rankings all year, and I thought that they were going to turn around. And I mean, I saw stuff that was open when I would watch games. I'd be like, okay, like, you know, they're just not hitting this, or this guy's dropping that, whatever, whatever. But this was the first time I saw them make a lot of really weird panic moves, and I saw a couple in the first half. So the first, like, when it got into the crunch time in the first half, at the end of the first half, he was only throwing to Mercedes Lewis and Alan Lazard, only, exclusively. And they were forcing A.J. Dillon, which they've been trying to do the last 3 or 4 weeks to try to get this power element going. And did you notice they flipped Adam Stenovich up into the booth? They pulled him off the sidelines and then
put him
in the booth. Yeah, for the second half.
Okay.
They put him in the booth for the second half. And right, so there was like less than a minute left. It was when the Lions scored right before halftime. And but the Packers were like frantically calling timeouts. But the Lions were already deep in Packers territory at that point, or somewhat deep in Packers. They were crossing midfield. But the Packers were like desperately calling timeouts to try to get the ball back with like 30 seconds left in the half, just to try to get something happening with that offense before halftime, and I guess to just get into the break with some good vibes. And I was just like, wow, this team is looking for anything. Now it's not, okay, these things are working and we're just not hitting it. It's nothing's working and we're kind of freaking out a little bit, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like our Simpsons clip of the week here.
What the hell are you two doing?
It's called rocking out.
You wouldn't understand, Dad. You're not with it. I used to be with it. But then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it, and what's it seems weird and scary to me. It'll happen to you.
So I didn't think those first three drives, you know, the first one ends with an interception that bounces off a guy's helmet on a first and goal from the 5, I think it was. They get back down to the 1 yard line and they call. By the way, I was so happy to see a tackle eligible play blow up on the team that called it, because I hate those.
They're so stupid. It is the goal line fade of trick plays. It's such a low return on your, and most of the time they do work, but why you're just doing it to be a I don't know. I don't want to say the word, but you know what you are.
Let's just score points.
Yeah.
After the helmet deflection interception on the first one, let's just put points on the board. But obviously, like, those two plays are touchdowns. I mean, those are touchdown caliber drives that end up with 0 points. And then obviously they get into scoring territory again and narrowly miss a fourth down conversion. And that's it. They could have. This is not a stretch. This is not one of those things where it's like, well, if everything broke right, they win this game 78-0, which everyone's complaining about. But they could very well have been leading this game 17-0 midway through the second quarter. And then, you know, are we that worried about it? What I think, and this is my sense from sitting alone and unloved in my basement and watching this all unfold. That's when they started to force things, because they still have a 0 on the board. They know this Lions defense is bad, and I thought Rodgers was forcing things more than I think ever seen him force things. The third interception was it just wasn't really there. It's a nice play by Kirby Joseph, but it just wasn't really there at that point. And on top of that, Joseph had almost gotten his hands on an earlier pass on a similar route concept there. So it felt like that was when panic mode set in, and then they just didn't really have anywhere to go with it in the second half. They lose Romeo Dubs, and that's, you know, that's problematic to an extent. They're probably relying more on Sammy Watkins than they want to, and Sammy Watkins had a really good career. He's just not cutting it anymore. It's really tough to run him out there at this point. Not only, you know, the chemistry thing is an issue, but on top of that, chemistry is an issue with Christian Watson, but you can put the ball in Christian Watson's hands and he can maybe do something special. Sammy Watkins is just kind of killing him out there right now. They were like out of answers, but they were so desperate to find it. And I think that's another difference between this team and the last year of Mike McCarthy, where Rodgers almost seemed resigned to, Like, okay, this just isn't going to work this year, and that's just going to be it. It feels like he thinks it can work. He's trying to will it to work. Maybe it's a little bit of delusion being later in his career and knowing that he might not have another, you know, whatever, 3 years or whatever it is to work this thing out. But, man, he was just, he was forcing throws that I've just never seen him force before. He is not, you know, he's an aggressive passer, but he does not put the ball in danger. He goes out of his way to not put the ball in danger many times over the course of his career. It was just a really weird sign, and I'm not sure how to read it going forward. It's good that he hasn't given up, but it's bad that they're just sort of, I don't know, what's the metaphor here, Connor? He's just sort of, he's like insisting on finishing the boxing match, even though he's just repeatedly getting smashed in the face.
Maybe.
Something along those lines.
Something along those lines. That wasn't nice. You go along much nicer with much worse metaphors than I've had. So I should have been more enthusiastic about that, Gary.
No, it wasn't good. And I was running out of steam at the end. And maybe like Aaron Rodgers, I kind of sensed it, but I wanted to power through anyway.
He's not only forcing throws, but I thought that there were three times that I could count where he missed it by about a centimeter. And that's a weird thing that you don't see Aaron Rodgers do a whole lot. There was the deep ball, and the Lions defensive back made a phenomenal play on it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yep.
And there was another one when they were driving, and I feel like it was a nice adjustment, and the receiver broke with him on the ball. And I feel like he just, it was short by, again, about a centimeter. Like, and I think he's just, he's missing these things just a little bit. He's forcing them just a little bit more frequently. And you don't know what to blame it on because, you know, Davante Adams had a great game today, right? And certainly his absence is felt. I just don't know if they've figured out how to run this offense in another way. Like normally when a lot of these outside zone teams, they lose a big guy, they lose a big wide receiver. And you and I wrote about this a lot this offseason. You have to replace it with very specific component parts that make the offense still work. And so either they did that and Aaron Rodgers is just not breaking these guys in, or there's a disconnect on what the offense needs, what Aaron Rodgers wants, and what the personnel staff has found for them. And so something here isn't working. And one thing that I keep going back to is, like, if Lazard is your every down playmaker, then he's not helping you in the running game, which you need him to do. And then if you're not running the ball, then nothing is open the way that it's supposed to anyway. And so, and that's just one very little component piece of a very large, seemingly very large problem. I mean, they're going to miss the playoffs. I don't think they're getting in at this point.
Rams, Buccaneers.
So kind of on the flip side of this, a nice story for an older man who plays quarterback in the NFL. That is Tom Brady gets the comeback win over the Rams. Obviously the rematch of the divisional playoff game last year that the Rams utterly dominated, and then Cam Akers kind of fumbled it back to the Buccaneers in the most literal sense. But yeah, this was, I mean, you know, we thought we were going to come on the show and just be like, man, Buccaneers, what a disjointed mess, all the drops, all the execution issues, this interior line is completely unplayable, et cetera, et cetera. And then they just, you know, they put together a exceptional touchdown drive to win this one in the end.
Yeah, Scotty Miller gets bailed out by a classic Tom Brady drive where if you give that guy even just a glimpse of sideline with 40 seconds left, he can go, like, if the field was twice as long as it was, he could probably make it down there to score a touchdown. It felt inevitable. And it's very cool that he can still flip that on and do that at age 46. It's very impressive.
It's a team that probably is going to make the playoffs because that division is so bad. But man, I don't know. They are really difficult to watch, and they're still, I'm sure they have like 1,000 primetime games left this year. We're going to see so much of them, but that offense is completely dysfunctional at this point. And You know, I don't know. Maybe it feels different if Mike Evans doesn't have the drops and, you know, Scotty Miller takes one off the face mask in the end zone and what would have been the game winner. And maybe this all feels a little bit different, but it's just, it's going to have to be, that defense is going to have to dominate, and it's going to have to be games like this where, you know, you keep it within possession and then you get it in Brady's hands and just something magic happens.
Yeah. I mean, you do what you're built for at this point. I mean, you know, and I know they're kind of piecemealing it together right now. And people certainly roll their eyes when you have Chris Godwin and Mike Evans and Tom Brady that you're piecemealing it together. But this offense, you know, it had a shelf life. I think Tom Brady, you know, this is the thing that everybody, I think, needs to step back and realize. You know, Tom Brady knew this thing had a shelf life. Tom Brady knew that what was happening in New England had a shelf life. And that's why he was trying to leave like 2 years before he actually left. You know, and mm-hmm. that's why the Dolphins started tampering with him when they did. And I think that's why he started trying to leave Tampa when he did. I think everyone knows that this thing could only work in a very specific kind of way under certain circumstances. And when Leonard Fournette runs the ball 9 times for 2.1 yards a carry, this thing isn't going to work. I mean, they have no interior running game. Nothing sets up the way that it's supposed to. And Tom Brady, I mean, 2 weeks ago, he was taking like eight step drops just to get himself away from the line of scrimmage. So, you know, these are the games that they're going to win now. And it's weird that they're doing it against the Rams of all the teams.
They're going to put him in punt formation. He's going to be taking Tupa snaps 15 yards. Yeah, got to get Tom Tupa in there. Do some consulting. Tell him about taking snaps from 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah, it's this Rams team, by the way, and we've said this all year, they look tired and worn, and this offensive line can't block Matthew Stafford, and there's just nothing in the weaponry besides Cooper Kupp at this point. But I do just want to mention, Cooper Kupp had that long, I think it was a 69-yard you know, catch-and-run touchdown, sort of a bit of a blown coverage, but nice design as well, which you still see some really neat stuff from Sean McVay, but he scored that touchdown and just, you know, he like sort of flipped the ball nonchalantly, but not in like the cool way, deliberate way. It looks like he's just ready to, I don't know, sleep for like 3 weeks at a time and just like, let's get it next year.
Yeah, I mean, we joked about it, but at some point, if you're Sean McVay, you're just like, let's cryogenically freeze Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, and Cooper Kupp, and then we'll be back next year. This is just who could have predicted it, the Geno Smith resurgence, and so let's allow that to happen. Let's give Pete Carroll, let's let him have a good time, and then let's all just pack this away. But you're right. He was, you know, I think on that play too, it was a bad snap. Like Matt Stafford had to like catch it in midair and stuff. It's just, this is not beautiful football. And this is the coach who really like invented modern beautiful football. It's very sad.
Mm-hmm. Titans, Chiefs.
Man, the Titans are really no fun to play against, huh?
Feisty.
It's like, it's, you know, obviously it's some of that Patriots stuff. They're also, they've got like that Steelers of 10 years ago vibe where it's like they're just sort of ultra physical and violent as well. So that's not how you're supposed to play football anymore. It's supposed to be all points and scoring.
Jeffrey Simmons is also having one of the best seasons for a defensive tackle not named Aaron Donald in like the last 6 years. He's been really good this year.
Aaron Donald ruined it for all the other good defensive tackles.
Correct.
Is where we kind of landed here. But look, this in as far as I'm concerned, Mike Vrabel has done the best coaching job in the NFL this year, and there's been a lot of really impressive jobs, especially among the first year head coaches here. But he keeps losing talent. He's playing a rookie quarterback who's very limited. And they just keep on playing these games on his terms. And this should be like a 2-win team at this point in the season. And they're not. They're going to win that division again.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, you know, you can say things about different coaches, right? Where it's like, oh, Andy Reid's always going to throw the ball, or this guy's always going to do that. But all Mike Vrabel does is outcoach his team's expectations. And it's not just like, okay, the media has expectations. It's like your Pythagorean win-loss, right? Which is like the closest thing we can come to estimating your, you know, how good of a team you should be. And every year he wins more games than that, which is wild.
Oof. Well, this was obviously no Ryan Tannehill, so you have Malik Willis. Yes, it's a limited offense. They still got a couple big plays here from Derrick Henry, but they just, I mean, I don't know how you felt at halftime. I was like, man, Titans are going to win this, aren't they?
Well, I think we saw why, and, you know, we had talked about this. We'd heard this during the preseason, right, that the Titans were very, very serious about Malik Willis not escaping the pocket during the preseason. They wanted him to start to play on schedule and play on time. Yep. And it's for moments like these. And we saw that, you know, I think Willis definitely reverted to a version of himself that, you know, was at Liberty, which is he was rewarded for doing this, right? But he could not pocket finesse his way out of anything, and he couldn't create anything. That Chiefs defensive line was fantastic tonight. One of the best games that I've seen them have in a while. Colin Saunders was really good. Carlos Dunlap was really good tonight. He had like a turn back the clock game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, they shut down any chance of a comeback in the second half because they didn't allow Willis to get out of the pocket. And oddly, the Titans allowing Mahomes to get out of the pocket kind of turned the tide the other way.
Yeah. Yeah. And we know what the Titans did to them in the regular season last year. It's on one hand, it's just it's a bad matchup for the Chiefs. But on top of that, just, yeah, man, it's a defense that just sort of, it's the old Pat Riley strategy of, well, they can't call a foul on every play, so we're just going to hold and grab and push and shove, and you know, everyone's going to be really mad if the refs keep blowing the whistle. And it's that kind of idea in the secondary, and this is what the Patriots did in the early and mid-aughts, where you kind of just hold on every on every play. You just manhandle every eligible receiver on every down, and you're not going to get flagged every time. And you're just going to end up ultimately frustrating the crap out of your opponent.
Why did teams stop doing that? Because the Patriots did it, the Seahawks did it during Legion of Boom, and then it was just like everyone stopped doing it. Probably around the time they made pass interference reviewable for that one awful year. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what gets passed down as far as like point of emphasis type stuff. So I don't know. Maybe it came down and people took it seriously. And
I mean,
it's how I do it.
The hold on Kelce was just so egregious at the goal line when they had like, when they moved the Chiefs up from like the 1 yard line to like the quarter inch line, because there was like eight straight penalties. And yeah, I mean, they're just, they're touching the name on the back of the jersey and yanking it. There seems to be no concern about the flags.
Yeah. Hey, I say this with admiration. That is the Titan style of football, and man, it was frustrating the crap out of the Chiefs tonight.
And look at, you know, it's a common thread across secondary play, defensive, certain defensive positional play, and offensive line play. Because if you looked at all the great Packer teams of the 20 of the Mike McCarthy era, right? The offensive line coach that they had used to teach situational holding. They used to hold on every play, and same thing, you know. And if you can get away with it, if you're smart, if you're a good coach, like Mike Vrabel clearly is, then you can make it work for you. And they really, really made the Chiefs work for it. The only person they didn't have a plan for, Gary, was former MMQB preseason pod X Factor Noah Gray, and that's who ends up busting this thing wide open.
Noah Gray and fellow X Factor Michael Badgley, I'm sure, smiling on somewhere.
Raiders Jaguars.
So we're like halfway through the show now, Connor, and I want to admit this so that everyone knows. We're on the same page. This is a pretty thin week as far as games go. And that's why Raiders-Jaguars escape the lightning-ish round.
Yeah. I now look at the show notes very quickly before we start. I did not look at them hard enough to realize that Raiders Jaguars was not in the in the lightning-ish round. I thought Yannick Ngakoue was still on the Raiders for a second, and I thought this was sort of your long con to talk longer about Yannick Ngakoue, but no, this is just this is Gary sneaking in the Jags, who you love. And you
I do
love the Jags. And yeah, and they got back on track here.
Yep, no one should be off the Jaguars bandwagon. I thought it was getting... Look, I think both these teams are good. Again, the 2014 goulash, I think these are two of the better teams in there. But, you know, are they both better than the Vikings? Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, but you play poorly in the red zone and you let a couple games get away. And this is, you know, your record is what counts in the end. The takeaway here is that Trevor Lawrence is, he was shaky in the London game against Denver. He was tremendous in this game. He was everything he was built to be in this game, which we've seen him be in a handful of games this year. And, of course, they were good in the red zone. They didn't do stupid stuff. He didn't throw an interception. He has three red zone interceptions this year. That is way too many. That's what you should have in, like, a career. But, yeah, this is what they are. They're a good team, and the Raiders are pretty good, too. So I thought this was a nice victory here for the Jaguars. If you're the Raiders, you're just... We've seen this from them a couple times this year. You need some offense to be able to close out a game that you're leading the second half, and they just peter out in the second half of games, it seems like. They just run out of ideas offensively and just kind of, you know, just crawl to the finish in a not good way.
Another Waterboy reference apt here. Who knew? But at halftime of the Bourbon Bowl, when he sees Henry Winkler's character and he goes, "Coach Klein, where are you going?" And he just, "I'm going to go get a hot pretzel." You know?
Yeah.
That's how Josh McDaniels feels sometimes. Like, I don't know, man. I'm going to go get a hot pretzel. The Jaguars, I like, they're still getting, like, silly cute in moments. That lost fumble, that play was ridiculous. I don't know if that, it was like a jet sweep with their backup running back, and Trevor Lawrence is in the shotgun, and you pass the ball even further behind the line of scrimmage. You're starting that play, like, 7 yards in the hole. The fumble was almost like an improvement based on some of the other things that could have happened there. But, you know, once they iron out the cuteness, I think this is going to be, you know, once Trevor Lawrence takes ownership, because this is, a lot of this is what he's familiar with from Clemson. That was the team's aim, was to rebuild something that he understood, burn the playbook from last year. And I think once he's able to take full ownership of this, I think we're really going to see something wild and spectacular. This is his rookie year. Like, we can't stress that enough. I talked to people down there, and, you know, that film was useless. It had to be burned. There was nothing that you could look at on that tape and say, "Oh, okay, like, we'll take this and we'll take that." It was completely from scratch. If they had that silver thing from Men in Black that erased his memory, they would have used it on him just to make him forget what happened last year.
Vikings Commanders.
All right, and we moved the Vikings up here out of the lightning round because they keep winning games, and good for them. This is the level of opponent that they're at. And again, they're probably going to make the playoffs because they're collecting wins here. This Vikings team is not better than last year's Vikings team. I'm going to get one of those skywriting things. I don't know exactly where I'm going to do it. I'm going to do some random city in America. And it's just going to be that this Vikings team is not better than last year's Vikings team. They're hanging around against not very good opponents. And this year they're winning those coin flips.
And you know what's going to happen, too, is we're going to spend the rest of the season saying this. And then they're going to just get dumb hot, and they're going to beat like the Eagles in the divisional round of the playoffs for no reason. Like, they're going to have no business doing it. There's going to be like three fumbles in the game or something like that, and they end up making it to the NFC Championship game. You know that's going to happen, right?
There's another team that I don't dare tell their fans that they're getting a little bit carried away here. But I just want to say to everyone, like, Nick Foles led a team to a Super Bowl. The defense is really good too, but these things happen. Yeah, could the Vikings like win the Super Bowl? Sure. It's within the realm of possibility. They're one of the 32 NFL teams. They could do it. Should you expect them to? No. Are they going to be one and done in the playoffs, depending on the matchup? Yeah. And, you know, it's the same team it was a year ago. But yeah, I mean, wins are wins, and enjoy wins, and that's the way it is. I will say, I love the taxpayer, Taylor Heineke. I respect what he's doing there. Oh, man, I can't take another Commanders stretch run here where they're playing relevant football. I want to be able to tune this team out like I did the Falcons a year ago.
Yeah, they're wearing their grunt style uniforms today. And boy, they just look, it's like a cross between Arizona State and like a fired police officer who's at some fringe security job, like his uniform. Like that's what we have in Washington right now. But you know, pass rush played well, which is, I mean, their pass rush is wildly underperforming for the level of talent that they have, but they got some pressure on Kirk Cousins despite the fact that he gets rid of the ball really quickly. And, you know, they're hanging around in these games. FedEx Field was quite empty. I don't think that there was really anybody there to see that. But, yeah, I don't know, man. It's going to suck watching the Vikings win the Super Bowl, but...
Dolphins, Bears.
All right, so here's the lightning-ish round. We're starting here. I actually, this one could have escaped too.
Let's make the decision to move it out. Like, this is us moving it out.
Yeah.
Like, we can just do it right now. Like, you know.
I already said it, Connor.
Take it back.
Okay, well, let's do this. Let's move the Van Ginkle touchdown. The Van Ginkle touchdown comes out. We need Jimmy Traina saying Van Ginkle, and then we'll move it out of the lightning's wrath. Yeah, Van Ginkle scored a touchdown. That was the big one.
Player of the MMQB, guy that we love, all around wedge busting, edge setting, special teams ace, Andrew Van Ginkle. Really, it was the difference maker in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, this was, and now we'll go to the lightning's round and talk about the game.
Okay.
Look, Justin Fields is having a phenomenal run here over the past month. I cannot believe the Bears are still competitive at this point, let alone they probably win this game. They're a blocked punt and a couple of really, really suspect flags and non-flags away from winning this game, which is just nuts considering they, you know, basically sold their defense for parts and were like, yeah, Justin Fields, just do what you want. Chase Claypool got a little bit involved. They had a couple plays for him, but obviously he is nowhere near being a even part-time factor for this offense at this point. But man, Fields creating, it was a huge problem for the Patriots on Monday night a couple of weeks ago. It was a huge problem for this Dolphins defense, and it almost just single-handedly won this game.
It was a big problem for Dallas last week, too. I mean, they put up yards. They put up points. And, Justin Fields is having arguably the best single performance month of any player in the NFL this year, outside of maybe, I don't know, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle at the beginning of the season when the Dolphins were lighting the world on fire, or Tua when he had the 6-touchdown game, whatever, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But, I love it. I'm actually, I'm writing an apology to the Bears this week, because okay. I wrote that Justin Fields, I backed into it by saying that the NFL should have a transfer portal for quarterbacks and that Justin Fields should definitely enter it because the Bears are going to ruin his career. I don't know whether they're going to ruin his career or not, but boy, is he making it tough on them to ruin his career. He is just, he's escaping things in the backfield. He's making things happen. And, I guess, they are designing some cool stuff for him.
Yes.
And they are making things happen with Chase Claypool and Darnell Mooney, which is, it's not a lot.
He's more comfortable too as a passer. He is. Yes, the outer structure stuff is awesome, but you can't live on that. But some of the in-structure stuff, it's a lot better than it had been even back in September. So, man, it is, the arrow on him is certainly pointing up, and I think Tyreek Hill is the guy who you can put in the MVP conversation among the non-quarterbacks. Like, holy crap.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is I think Jalen Johnson's a fine player. I think he'll be a, you know, he'll have a lengthy career as sort of a quality cornerback in this league. If you like didn't know who the opponent was and you just watched Jalen Johnson this game in comparison to the people he was trying to cover and you were like, what do you think the guy's 40 time is? You'd be like, I don't know, looks like a 7'6", 7'8" type of guy right here. Oh my god, like, just a miserable day for him. The only thing that was saving him was the underthrows. But man, Tyreek Hill is unguardable right now. And when you put all your resources into guarding him, they have Jalen Waddle to go to. The Bears gave him a lot of zone looks. That's no good. I mean, the stress that speed puts on a zone defense, it just immediately obliterates it. So, boy, it's cooking right now for the Dolphins. And, you know, we'll see what happens as the year goes on. I do wonder, yes, if Tyreek has like a soft tissue injury, that's a huge issue. I do also wonder, as teams see more and more of what this Mike McDaniel offense is with this caliber of speed, does the speed just forever overwhelm? Or will teams find a way to counter that and adjust? I don't know if we have that answer yet, but it's working. The defense isn't very good, but it's working.
It was funny. Mike McDaniel said today that Justin Fields was as fast as any skill position player that he's seen in the league. I'm sure he's obviously leaving out Tyreek Hill there, who is on a different level. But speed is... We always used to make fun of Al Davis for stockpiling fast players, and it was never successful for the Raiders, but that wasn't the NFL back then, right? And it wasn't spread out, and there wasn't as much space to work with on the field. Now, I think speed is really the last. It's that last trait, right? That is not unstoppable, but is the thing that separates you from anybody else. I think that's why Hines from Indianapolis, for example, was why he had offers at the trade deadline, just because I think it's the one thing that if other teams have it and you don't, there's nothing you can do about it. And I'll make like a weird comp to, I think, like when the Royals won the World Series. Do you remember what I'm talking about? It was like 5 years ago.
When they beat the Mets? Yeah.
And they were just stealing like crazy. Like, that, didn't they steal a ton of bases in that World Series?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah,
for no reason. Like, and they were just faster than any other team, and it was a weird thing. And stealing bases was not in analytically anymore, and they were just crushing people with it. And I think it's the one thing that if you have it and another team doesn't. And I've had a coach say this to me too, and it sounded profound at the time, but sounds really dumb when I'm saying it out loud. Is If you have that and another team doesn't, then that's the big middle finger. It's like there's nothing you can do about it. And so it still is probably the most valuable resource in the NFL.
Seahawks, Cardinals.
I don't want to make this into a new version of the SI Betting podcast. Rest in peace to me and Jimmy and Mitch and my brother Scott, who used to be on that. But did you know the Cardinals were favored in this game?
Really?
It made no sense. Like, once every 5 years, I see a line that's like, no, this is like a typo that just got spread around. It made no sense. They're so much worse than the Seahawks. And also, the Cardinals just happen, for some strange reason, they just always seem to play poorly at home. Their home road splits are opposite what you'd think they would be. But yeah, they were favored in this game. They are not anywhere near as good as the Seahawks, and that's how this one played out.
You have a shit fan base, you play bad at home. I think that, you know, that's obvious. That's how it always goes. What was the? Were they just +3?
And they're plus like 2.5 or something like that. If we keep going, let's keep riffing about the Cardinals fan base, and then I'll look it up as we do this. They're too busy complaining about last year's midseason power rankings to get out to the stadium and support the team.
3-6, by the way. How good does that Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim extension feel right now? And you have one of the oldest teams in the NFL.
Holy cow, man. It's so bad. They were 2-point favorites.
Jeez.
I was like, did Geno Smith get hurt? Like, it's wild to me.
I tend to stay away from gambling. I think I could get way too into that and just destroy my family's livelihood. But if I had seen that, that would have been I would have been all over that one for sure.
Shelby corrects. It was a pick 'em game by kickoff, apparently.
By kickoff, okay. But it opened at like a 2.5 or 2, right?
It was 2 as of yesterday, according to a competitor's website where I'm reading it. No one else should read it there.
Do you wager, Gary? Do you gamble?
No, I do like a pick'em pool, which I don't consider to be real betting.
So did the Cardinals just think like, as soon as DeAndre Hopkins gets back, this is going to be fine? Was that the idea? And wasn't that exactly what I remember standing next to Cliff Kingsbury at the podium at the Combine when he said, yeah, like we can't do that again. That was dumb to just make everything revolve around DeAndre Hopkins, and then when he gets hurt, we have no answer for anything. And it seems like that's what they're doing again.
Oh man, it was in this one. If you're going to diagnose this one, it's that bootleg and the tight end, coming across the formation. I don't know. The Seahawks do that like once every 5 plays, and the Cardinals didn't defend it once. On top of that, Billy Price is filling in at center for Rodney Hudson, and there were snapping problems, and then there were blocking problems after the snaps. So there's some stuff going on, but it's just not a very good team.
This is also the worst throwback in NFL, the worst completed throwback in NFL history. It was like in the second quarter. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, and it was going to stand for Pete Carroll. God bless Pete Carroll. I would have died if I was Pete Carroll and that was about to stand. I wouldn't be able to handle that.
I mean, it was... So just to set the scene for anybody who hasn't seen this, because it's a little bit of an obscure play, right? But it's the first play of the second quarter. The Seahawks are down 7-3. It's a toss to Kenneth Walker, and then he stops, throws it back to Geno Smith, who looks, and the only receiver downfield is Noah Fant, and there are 4 guys there. 4 guys! And he just, like, it just, like, shoves it in there, and it was, it was hysterical.
So we're talking about 2 different ones.
I'm talking about the first bad throwback, but I know that there are multiple bad throwbacks.
Yeah,
in this game.
I remember that one too, and that was weird because usually you see the throwback, and it was a slow developing one too. So it was like, yes, ooh, this might be something in the back. No, just the one receiver is quadruple covered is what it ended up being, and
it
just
was
got
still complete. They still couldn't do anything about it.
Jammed it in there anyway. You cannot stop Geno Smith this year.
It's incredible.
The one I was of it, the one the Cardinals did where. They did the quick screen that was supposed to be a lateral, and then it was, well, one of them was supposed to be a lateral, but basically it ended up being Kyler Murray threw a pass 2 yards forward on the screen, and then the guy who caught the screen threw it about 6 yards forward to the other side of the field, and James Conner ran for like 9 yards, and nobody stopped it. And then they just started to line up for the next play, and I don't know if it got challenged or someone in New York finally, the 4 o'clock window was not very good today, but kind of woke up and was like, wait, no, you're not allowed to do that. You can't just keep on throwing forward passes down the field.
Didn't they screw that up last year too? Wasn't there something that they botched very similarly?
In the playoff game, if I remember correctly, in the Rams game, they had one called back.
Oh, I love it. It was 2 forward passes. Yeah. And this was
that's the new air raid.
Do you remember Kevin Kelly, the high school football coach who never punts?
Yeah.
His next big thing, but he ended up going to college, Presbyterian, and now I don't know what he does now. But his big thing was the next frontier is going to be rugby style NFL stuff, where you're going to like lateral and lateral and lateral. And if we can figure out a way to make this work, we're going to be unstoppable. This would be like if the Cardinals kind of like listened to 30 seconds of a podcast of him talking and then tried to design a play without Googling the rules, that would be the throwback. What an ass game between two teams I just really couldn't give a shit about. But the best part of this whole thing is I did open Twitter to look at the double Cardinals terrible throwback again. And Geno Smith, Rick Pitino just tweeted this happened like 5 seconds ago. Rick Pitino, Geno Smith, 26 of 34 passing, really happy for him. So he just tweets 26 of 34 passing dash really happy for him. Everyone is always in a rush. It takes time and patience to reach one's potential. I've learned that lesson the hard way. Go get him, Gino. And Gino just says, thanks, Rick. I'm a big fan of yours. Just, what a weird exchange that was.
It really between is.
Two people that you would never think for any reason would have any reason to discuss anything with each other. That might have been my favorite part of the podcast so far.
Oh, good.
Chargers, Falcons.
Yeah, I don't have a ton on this one. It looked like the Chargers were going to let one slip away. They're still. I was hoping for something neat coming out of the bye week here, as opposed to just sort of more of the same and hoping Justin Herbert bails him out, which he did in this one.
Yeah, I would think that if the Chargers were going to make any full scale changes, they would have made them by now. But this was a game that. Boy, you just really thought that you wanted to see them come out and just light the Falcons up, you know? And they didn't do it. I mean, this thing doesn't look pretty. It's just, they're like Broncos plus, right? They're like Broncos, they're like Broncos plus without like a crazy person who does calisthenics on an airplane as their quarterback, you know?
It's Broncos plus, but for another reason.
Right, right. But the Falcons are cool still. Like I still like the Falcons.
I do too. I'm still on the it's not a bandwagon, it's a smaller vehicle than that, but
like a Volkswagen Golf.
Yeah, I'll get behind that. I'll ride my skateboard like a cool 80s kid attached to the bumper of that one. Cordero Patterson's back. 2 touchdowns for him. Good on him.
Yes, a random stylistic question. Why is Cordero Patterson your goal line back?
Well, he's big and he's good, so he can do it.
Boy, that Tyler Allgeier, the rookie out of BYU, he's feisty. You know?
Yeah, I like him. I get what you're saying about the goal line. It's like you kind of don't want to burn Cordero Patterson's touches down there and do the wear and tear thing. I get that.
I also maybe have him on a high roller fantasy football team, and I was just like, you know, let's get this thing moving. That's source of so many of my complaints, hidden source of so much of my frustration.
Colts, Patriots.
Oh man, Sam Ehlinger getting the first taste of the Belichick defense here. I try not to like overrate that when I'm thinking about these games going in, and it's like, you know, Belichick, young quarterback, gonna dominate him, and yeah, that's pretty much what this was.
Do you think it's just like Bill Belichick just comes alive in these moments now, where he just, it's almost this sort of dark, you know, I want the kids to wake up in Christmas morning and not have any presents and then see the looks on their faces kind of thing that he has with rookie quarterbacks. I don't know. Because he really does come alive in these moments, you know?
It's just, I just think what they do is still relatively unique. And it's just such a, you can never just get a clean read on it. And if you're a, you know, you want some sort of clarity if you're a young quarterback. You want to know what you're looking at. And I think you never quite know what you're looking at with this defense. So
I don't know what I was looking at for this entire game. This was just, and so I had, so here's one cogent point I think we can make about the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to the Packers in overtime, which is a, looks bad now, right?
Yeah.
But at the time, you're like, okay, this is a game you could see the Patriots losing. And then they lost to the Bears right at the start of when they began to allow Justin Fields to be the way that he is now. That was the first game of the, let's say, the post-Justin Fields revolution. So you give the Bears credit for surprising New England a little bit there. That's probably mm-hmm. not something they necessarily game planned for. In every other situation, they've won. They've beaten all the teams they should beat, and they've lost to all the teams they should lose to. This is a, you know, they are the middle class of the, like, the upper middle class of the NFL right now.
Yep.
And I still think they can make the playoffs. That's a team that I'm not, if they continue to win the games that they're supposed to win, they beat the Jets, which looks like a quality victory right now. They demolish the Jets, which looks like a quality victory right now. So I don't know. I just don't know what to think about them. It's nothing is fixed. It's basic. It's a lot of Ramondre Stevenson, which is not what we expected coming into the year.
Yeah. The, you know, the Mac Jones situation is still not good, but yeah, man, I don't know. I don't know how I can't handicap the rest of the AFC East at this point. They're all in it, obviously, but, you know, if you're starting at 0-0 with all three of those teams, I think I might still lean Patriots. I don't know.
If you're starting the Patriots, Dolphins, and Jets at, like, you're putting them all in a Royal Rumble.
Correct, yeah.
You're taking Patriots. Neutral field.
Panthers, Bengals.
Shelby doesn't want to know.
Yeah.
He's right to move on in the Jimmy train. Oh, this game was no bad. The Bengals just destroyed the Panthers. I mean, this is what the Panthers were supposed to be after they sort of waved the white flag and finally got rid of Matt Rhule and did what they, you know, should have done to an extent last offseason there. And of course, Joe Mixon goes and scores, I don't know, 9 touchdowns in the first half, whatever it ended up being.
Yeah, that was... I mean, that's what everyone will remember from that game. How do you not get him a 6th, right? A 6th would have set the NFL record.
Really? Is that true?
Hold on.
Look it up as I tell people that PJ Walker got benched and Baker Mayfield played in the second half of this one and threw 2 touchdowns. I don't think that's good news or bad news. It's just something that happened in this game. Between the times when Joe Mixon was scoring touchdowns. But, yeah, I don't know. The Panthers resurgence was fun for a little while, but it was not sustainable. I mean, it's just not the way things were supposed to go.
Okay, it was 6 would have tied the NFL record.
Okay. Didn't Kamara get 6 a couple years ago on, like, a
on Christmas
Saturday 20, game or something?
On Christmas Day of 2020.
Oh, there you go.
Also 5, Clinton Portis, 2003, James Stewart of the Jacksonville Jaguars in 1997, Cookie Gilchrist of the Buffalo Bills in 1963, Jim Brown of the Cleveland Browns.
Yep, know him.
Did you know the Cleveland Browns were named? That's Jim Brown. That's why they named him the Cleveland Browns. And Alvin Kamara. So, and then Ernie Nevers.
Nice.
Are you a big Ernie Nevers guy?
I like anyone named Ernie.
Yeah.
is there someone horrible named Ernie? Is there a serial killer named Ernie? Probably not.
My dog. Alvin Kamara.
Ernie.
Yeah. Alvin Kamara tied Ernie Nevers' record. So it's Ernie Nevers and Alvin Kamara both tied at 6.
Okay.
Ernie Nevers set it on Thanksgiving, 1929. Alvin Kamara broke it on Christmas. Pretty cool.
Oh, man. And, in like 10 years, someone's going to break it on Memorial Day when the season gets expanded like 7 more times. No, I guess it'll be like 30 years from now. The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again, after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.